2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast.
Sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.
Now, last month, a popular artist called David Kushner had to cancel his European leg of his tour, including two concerts at the Three Olympia in Dublin, because he broke down in tears at a gig in Newcastle, telling fans that he couldn't carry on the show because dealing with his anxiety was too much. And that was the end of the tour. Now, he has been praised for his honesty by various mental health charities for shining a light on how debilitating anxiety can be. And joining me to talk about how normal human emotion can become a big problem is psychologist Dr. John Francis Leader. John, thank you so much for joining us again today.
Great to see you, Laura.
I know,
I love
you
this
too.
Topic.
Yeah, because like obviously this can be huge for so many people, right? But firstly, how can you describe in a clinical sense what anxiety means?
So we're capable of having fear responses. Mm-hmm. And I think the big point is that they're safe. They're normal, healthy emotions. Mm-hmm. But of course, sometimes the problem is they're disproportionate to the situation we're in.
Okay.
And it's a bit of a tricky thing with anxiety because it can be the straw that breaks the camel's back, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sometimes it's not just the moment we're in, but it's this accumulation of stuff over time. And of course, there can be underlying medical reasons and a variety of things like that too. But that disproportionality really is the thing, because when you're afraid, you have adrenaline, you have cortisol, you have hormones in your body that give you extra energy to take action. But sometimes we don't need them.
Okay, so that's kind of when this can become an issue. What are the common symptoms that would point towards anxiety becoming a problem? Is it that we've just got too many of these emotions?
Yeah, and there's a huge educational piece about this. This is why I really love talking about it as a topic, because we obviously have to take it seriously, and there's obviously a medical and a diagnostic and a psychological aspect to this in a clinical sense, as you mentioned. But there's also just an educational piece, I suppose, about normalizing these feelings too. Mm. And that's not one or the other, because even if somebody in a very severe place with anxiety still could benefit from learning to kind of work with the feelings in a kind of a day-to-day sense as well.
Yeah.
Just sometimes people might need extra supports. But really physical stress in the body, the heart beating, the palms sweating, some of those adrenaline responses, the active worried mind is another huge part of it as well. And of course, those feelings of insecurity, dread, etc.
Yeah. Well, because speaking of that, right, how can somebody kind of tell the difference between the normal stress that, you know, we need to feel in our day to day life and then, you know, it tipping over into becoming a disorder, like an anxiety disorder? Like, what is the main difference between the two of those?
And this is part of the problem, because our system, for our ancestors thousands of years ago, if you hear the rustle in the bush, you could assume it's nothing. But what if it is something?
Yeah.
So that's the problem. Anxiety is a combination of your fear responses, but your imagination kicking into gear. Mm. So sometimes it can be hard to know. So really, from a clinical sense, there are certain diagnostic criteria that are used, which are really the level of the feelings, how proportional they are to the kinds of situations you're in, and also whether you're responding to supports and things that help you calm you down.
Okay.
If they're persistent, then typically a diagnosis is used. But again, we got to be careful with that. We don't want to think that it's just something external from us, like a disease.
Mm-hmm.
It is actually a capacity that we have to feel anxious. So we do need to learn to work with it too.
Like it's a part of our bodies.
Yeah, it literally is.
There was a study done over in the UK, and there's been a surge of people between the ages of 18 and 24 who were reporting symptoms of anxiety. What do you make of this?
There's a huge increase, isn't there, in just social communication about this. And that's a really good thing. If you go back, you know, 50, 60 years ago, it was not the case.
No, it wasn't even a word.
You'd be very anxious to talk about your anxiety if, as you say, you actually had language for it to begin with. So that's really good. The only thing we have to be careful, though, about is self-diagnosis, isn't it? Is the other side of it. So that's where it can go. You know, we can kind of go, I think I have that or that or that.
Yeah.
And you know, the way the same symptoms seem to apply to most conditions anyway. So it's very easy to talk yourself into something because other people are talking about it. But nonetheless, yes, the talking about it is really good. What we probably need a bit more is talking about what to do with it a little bit more. And that's the bit I'd like to see.
Okay, so you want to talk about if you feel sick, if you feel full to the brim of anxiety filling your chest, like what do we do then? Like, do we go and get ourselves some help, or are there stuff that we can do for it?
When it comes to both anxiety, but these types of things generally, the World Health Organization has a pyramid and they think about sort of basic self-care on the bottom level of the pyramid. In the middle are more things like community support, or training or helps like that. And then up at the top of the pyramid are the specialist, more kind of medicalized supports.
Okay.
And I think that's probably what we want with anxiety, because then you get a huge amount of prevention.
Yeah.
Like if we were taught in schools, like these are normal feelings. Here's how you recognize them. Here's how you work with them. Mm. Here's how prevention works. And then, of course, for some people, they still might be more persistent and then more specialist supports are needed.
Okay, fantastic. Because I mean, I know you, like, we went back to like 50 years ago of not having any language to speak about it. And now we're coming into a time where we talk about it so openly. We talk about our feelings online. We talk about having anxiety and it's all over TikTok. And sometimes it can nearly make you a little bit more anxious.
Particularly with anxiety, because it's the kind of thing that is a little bit contagious, as we know. Because you know the way you think about something, then you get the fear of thinking about it. And then it becomes a bit cyclical in that way. So that's kind of how it works. And it's also highly imagination based, of course, because even if we have a real issue, we will think about it even more than it is an issue and we'll amplify it.
Do you think that we've gotten better and made, you know, a good bit of progress in being open about it? Or is there still a lot of stigma around it? I know, like, from my point of view, obviously, it's my peers speak about it very, very openly, but that doesn't mean that that applies to everybody.
Yeah, and there are different kind of niches and categories, I suppose. And a lot of people I work with find that they're afraid to speak about it with certain people because of fear of, will it affect my job or will people give me a role or something like that? Maybe you can't. So there is that sort of a stigma, I suppose. And you hear a lot of that even in sports psychology, where athletes really admit that, you know, I'm very stressed, but I've just got good tools for dealing with it.
Yeah.
So that can be part of it too.
And I mean, I suppose that's what a lot of it is about, is having the good tools to deal with your stress and your anxiety. I mentioned about the physical side of anxiety there, but panic attacks are also associated with anxiety. Can you tell me about them? Because I often think it's a term that's kind of thrown about without proper understanding of what it really means.
Yeah, it's a term that's used a bit generically. And really what's happening there, it comes back to the fight or flight response.
Mm-hmm.
Your body's sympathetic nervous system is essentially the fight or flight response. It's that part of our system that detects danger.
Yeah.
And that could be real or imaginary. This is where it gets tricky, because we could be anticipating danger.
Yeah.
And then it sends a signal to your body to say, you know what, you're going to need to run from this or you're going to need to fight. Either way, you're going to need energy.
Mm-hmm.
So it gives you that rush of hormones like adrenaline and cortisol, and it makes your body ready. Now, that is absolutely fabulous if you're trying to escape a burning building or somebody's after you, that kind of thing, because you don't want to just be relaxed and chilled. You want to have that energy and spend it.
Mm-hmm.
But really what a panic attack is then when there's more of that energy than there is the ability to spend it. So there's too much of it. So it's a bit like a car in the wrong gear. It shakes.
Okay, fair enough.
Nothing wrong with the gear, but not for this moment.
But not for this moment in time. I totally get that if it's not being applied to the proper situation, if you're not running out of a burning building, if it's maybe something that's happening to you at work, then that's when it kind of overconsumes your body.
And there's a strong socio-cultural argument to say that our lives are just really, really different than our ancestors.
Yeah.
You know, because even 100 years ago, much less thousands of years ago, see, water off a duck's back is what anxiety was years ago. Because if you're working hard physically on the farm, a bit of extra adrenaline wasn't much of an issue necessarily, but often we're more sedentary, so you feel it a bit more too.
We've just got a text in here that says, I suffer from social anxiety and often feel like I have to make myself go out. Is that the best route? Am I indulging myself by staying at home more, and will that make it worse? I suppose that's very broad as well.
It is, and it will depend, of course, based on individual circumstances, so always get support. But yeah, broadly, there's two things we're interested in. One is kind of befriending the feelings a bit more and practicing feeling more comfortable about the situation. Because if we're mentally rehearsing the thing going wrong, we're going to be stressed even before we go out. So one is working on that level. The other thing is what's called exposure therapy or desensitization, which is practicing being in those environments. So that can be good in the right circumstances if it's something that is otherwise safe, but usually in small steps.
Yeah.
So you might do a little bit more each time and see how you get on and draw on support as you need to.
What kind of, I suppose, would you say, like, go out for a coffee as opposed to committing to a full dinner with your friends or something like that, just those little bits?
Being able to break it down in small steps is very useful because, again, it's a bit like exercise. You wouldn't go to the gym on day one and just pump all the heavy equipment.
Yeah.
So, you know, you kind of take it in steps, and that would be better anyway, even if things were going well.
Yeah.
But also, if you noticed you were a bit sore somewhere, then you'd go back to the physio.
Yeah.
You know, and you'd say, can I have help with this?
Isn't it so mad that you can, like, apply everything to your body? If, like, you know, if you broke your leg, you would go to the doctor and get it fixed. But as soon as something happens with their mind, we are very quick to be like, no, that's not a real problem. Like,
so
I can do it myself.
Yeah. And that's what's strange about feelings like anxiety. You say, is it real or imaginary?
Yeah.
It doesn't quite fit into either category, isn't it? It's sort of both. And that's the problem. Like watching a horror film, even if it's fiction, it becomes real in your body because of the anticipation.
Yeah, exactly. It can still be incredibly scary, even though you can convince yourself that this isn't actually happening. Are some people more prone to anxiety and developing a disorder over others?
Yeah, there is an individual difference there, no doubt. But really what's very interesting is it's not a given, though, that the ability to feel more anxious is a problem, in inverted commas, okay, even though it might cause problems in your life.
Yeah.
Because it can be connected with being creative and imaginative and even conscientious.
Yeah.
You know? So it's like a double-edged sword in some ways.
Yeah. And again, sorry, just to add on to this, is there a genetic link there? Is there something about nature versus nurture with how anxious you might feel?
Yeah, there are individual differences, and you see that even between different species of animals, yeah, isn't it? Some of them would be more like, you know, animals, birds of prey versus, you know, birds that are going to be preyed upon.
Yeah.
You know, you can see it in their body language. So there are some human differences as well. We all vary a little bit there. But again, I always kind of encourage people there not to think that, oh, well, if I'm a bit of an anxious person, therefore I'm necessarily at a disadvantage, because of course, maybe some problems in your life it could cause,
yeah,
but it could also be beneficial in other areas of your life, because maybe you're conscientious or good at imagining things,
yeah,
which can actually help you feel better as well if you learn to harness that.
Yeah, I suppose as well, like, it's very hard, but try to look at the positives of, you know, how you're feeling and how you differ to other people. If there is somebody who's listening in right now that anxiety is becoming a problem, just like that text that we got in there of trying to figure out what's the best course of action, are there any strategies that can bring it under control?
Yeah, so strategically, I think one of probably the key things to do is not fight it, as strange as that can sound, because we don't like it and it's really uncomfortable and we kind of want to battle it. But the problem is that tends to lead to fear of the fear, which leads to fear of the fear of the fear, and it just leads to a big feedback loop. So generally, I recommend treating it a bit like hunger. If you were very hungry, you wouldn't fight the hunger, you wouldn't deny it.
Yeah.
You would say, I am hungry.
Okay.
You kind of lean into it a bit.
Yeah.
I am anxious. And then the question is, what can you do about that?
Okay.
What can you eat? What can you nourish yourself with? So that may be therapeutic support. It may be doing something different to shift your mind or your attention.
Yeah.
It may be drawing on specialized supports. But that's the point, is addressing it and seeing it as a safety mechanism that's tried for thousands of years to keep your ancestors safe.
Yeah. So like it's not something that we need to be fearing. And you know, that age old saying of a problem halved is a problem shared, or a problem shared is a problem halved. That helps wonders as well. Sometimes you just say something out loud, you can feel the anxiety physically lifting off you.
Absolutely. And it can also just normalize our worries, isn't it? Because when we get caught in the echo chamber of our own thoughts, the theme can seem very real.
Yeah.
It's the equivalent of watching that horror film and then the ad break arrives.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, I'm fine. The zombies aren't after me. You know, so there's that bit of room. But also room to draw and support them when there are serious concerns.
So if you've spoken to your friends, you've spoken to your family members, at what point should somebody think about seeking professional help?
Well, really as early as possible. And that's part of the policy work I do, is like, how do we have preventatively education around these kinds of things?
Okay.
So it kind of doesn't need to get that far. But really, if in any doubt, I'd say seek support. And it doesn't need to be, you know, sort of Indiana Jones interventions in your life necessarily. It could just be little tips or guidance. There's a variety of things, some of them more on the health-based behaviours, like being active and eating well and things like that.
And sleeping, I suppose, as well.
Exactly. All those sorts of things. Yeah. But then some of them will be a bit more cognitive behaviour. Things like how to manage those thoughts just a little bit more effectively so they don't escalate. So that kind of thing. So if in doubt, I say always.
Yeah, just go and get it checked out. Yeah, I suppose you can just go to your local GP and
GP is a good force of action. There's loads of great resources continually as well available from good sources, you know. So yeah, it's a good time, as I say, for communication around these topics.
Yeah. I think what we have learned though from all of this is like actually just speaking to someone in your life will 100% make things feel a little bit better. John, thank you so much for joining us again today on such an important topic. That was psychologist Dr. John Francis Leader. And if you have been affected by this conversation, you can find some very helpful resources by searching the RTÉ helplines. We'll be right back after these.
2FM Mornings
with Laura Fox
Podcast,
sponsored by Maxall. From kids' lunches to tonight's dinner, you'll find bags more to get you through the week at Maxall.